Alice, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Bernhard. Dear ladies and gentlemen, let me welcome you to this forum on the Nobel Peace Prize and peacemaking. Today's forum has been jointly organized by Urban Forum, which is represented by Bernhard Müller. Hello, thank you. And Sinopress, which is represented by Helena Chang. Hello, thank you very much. My name is Alice Schmatzberger. I'm the founder of China Culture Desk based in Vienna, and I will be your moderator. That means I will guide you through today's agenda until 5 p.m. Yeah, let me introduce today's agenda. The title of the forum is Nobel Peace Prize and Peacemaking, and we are dealing with the following six questions. The will of Alfred Nobel and today's Nobel Peace Prize, the polarizing and politicizing effect of the prize versus its goals of fraternity between nations, standing armies, and promotion of peace. The 2021 nominees for the prize and related controversies. The Nobel Peace Prize and peacemaking with personal experiences from Professor Güzel. And last not least, in concluding our forum, we will look forward and talk about the challenge of returning the prize to its original goal. So, as you can see, we have a rather tight schedule. The forum is expected to end at 5 p.m. So I beg all the panelists to please take into account the time constraints when it comes to your statement, and please try to restrain yourself to something like 8 minutes. Talking about the panelists, I'm going to shortly introduce them. We have Professor Dr. Mehmet Şükrü Güzel, a threefold Nobel Peace Prize nominee. We don't have someone like that every day. And he's president of the Center for Peace and Reconciliation Studies. As a second panelist, we have Dr. Laszlo Flam, distinguished scholar at Europa Haus, Budapest. We have with us Dr. Georg Zanger, Austrian lawyer and president of the Austrian Chinese Business Association. And we have also with us Dr. Philip Agatonos. He is an Austrian diplomat, and he was the former head of the Office of Science and Technology at the Austrian Embassy in Beijing. And as I mentioned before, representing our organizers, this is Bernhard Müller and Helena Chang. So before we are going to start with the statements of our panelists, I would like to give a short presentation, like a short overview over today's topic. So I'm going to read to you an introduction prepared by the organizers, which should lay down the topic of our forum and also the multiple connected aspects when it comes to this topic. Early this year, the Norwegian Nobel Committee stated that 329 candidates have been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. Among the announced individuals and organizations are, for example, the NATO, Alexei Navalny, Black Lives Matter, or Martin Lee, and many others, of course. The question is now, what is the ultimate goal of this Nobel Peace Prize? Is it still for the sake of peacemaking and peacekeeping? When we look at NATO, for example, NATO is put under the spotlight as the dramatic situation in Afghanistan is holding the world's breath recently. Participating in the rescue operation, in addition to the USA, a dozen other NATO countries, including, for example, Britain, Germany, Spain, Sweden, Canada, have sent aircraft to Kabul and try to get their people out of this crisis zone. As a Nobel Peace Prize nominee, what role does NATO want to play in crisis operations and also in nation building in future? In view of the experiences, especially in Afghanistan, the tough defense alliance is left with a big question mark. rather than with physical concepts. One might also, this is why one might question the goal of today's Nobel Peace Prize. For more than 100 years, the prize has been awarded annually with only very few exemptions. It has been awarded to those who have, quote, done the most or the best work for fraternity between nations, for the abolition or reduction of standing armies, and for holding and promotion of peace congresses. This is according to the will of Alfred Nobel. So, is, for example, NATO still in line with these original goals? The Nobel Peace Prize is a prestigious one, as those outstanding personalities in history proved. For example, let's look at Linus Pauling, a laureate who received the Nobel Prize twice and one time as the Peace Prize in 1962. Linus Pauling used quantum mechanics to understand and describe chemical bonding, and later he vehemently campaigned against nuclear weapons. According to the Norwegian Nobel Committee, Alfred Nobel's friendship with Bertha von Suttner, the famous Austrian peace activist, and she herself later a recipient of the prize, profoundly influenced his decision to include peace as a category. The reason Alfred Nobel led the Peace Prize to be administered in Norway, whereas all the others are located in Sweden, is believed to be related to the concern that the Norwegian parliament, which was back then only responsible for domestic affairs, would be less exposed to manipulation by a government. Yet in the past years and decades, the political tendency of the National Peace Prize is not to be ignored. The award has been strongly influenced by current events and its interpretation under certain ideology, and thus not void of controversy. For example, Barack Obama, the former US president, once said that his Nobel Peace Prize is still a head scratcher for him. Looking back, the prominent Mahatma Gandhi, who had advocated lifelong India's peaceful struggle for independence, failed to be awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, whereas Yasser Arafat from the Palestinian side got the prize in 1994. Or the 2019 Nobel Prize laureate Abiy Ahmed, he was largely responsible for the outbreak of a civil war in 2020 between the central government of Ethiopia and the Tigray province. So today, the interpretation of the Nobel Peace Prize is much broader than it has been. In the 1960s, the prize was awarded for the first time for commitment to human rights, and recognized for the first time was also the work for the environment and sustainable development in 2004. As for organizations, however, the view on the prize is polarized too. The United Nations has probably rightly awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for several times. For example, Kofi Annan, got the prize 2001, and also the World Food Program of the United Nations has been awarded the Peace Prize in 2020. On the other side, on the occasion of awarding the prize to the European Union in 2012, former winners declared that the European Union clearly was not a champion for peace, and that this decision distorts more or less the will of Alfred Nobel. And last not least, one could mention here another example, an NGO called Doctors Against Forced Organ Harvesting, which was nominated twice for the Nobel Peace Prize by falsely accusing China of the forced organ harvesting for transplant operations and other medical procedures. So, if the current Nobel Peace Prize is distorting Alfred Nobel's will, in which way or to which extent? This is a question worth asking, and this is what we are talking about today. So the various statements of our panelists will focus around the status quo of the Nobel Peace Prize, on the related controversies, and last not least, we will also try to look at the question on how to realign the Nobel Peace Prize according to its original goals. So far, the introduction to our forum today. I would like now to move on to our first panelist. For our first topic, we have the honor of having distinguished Professor Mehmet Şükrü Güzel. As I said before, he himself a 3-time nominee for the Nobel Peace Prize and founder and president of the Center for Peace and Reconciliation Studies. So, Professor Güzel, would you please be so kind as to share with us your reflections on the will of Alfred Nobel and today's Nobel Peace Prize? Please, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, and many thanks for inviting me for this forum, and it's an honor for me to participate. And when we are talking about the Nobel Peace Prize, I was nominated 3 times. We are talking about humanity and high values of the people. And when we remember, as you mentioned, the history of the Alfred Nobel Prize, I don't want to enter the details, but at that time, he was above his generation. And when we are talking about the Nobel Peace Prize in the spirit of Alfred Nobel, then we have to remember, first of all, the peace movement of the 19th century. And he was a member of an Australian peace movement. And at that time, the understanding of peace is different than today's politicized poles of the world. And it's a value of cultural heritage. So when we are talking about Alfred Nobel and Nobel Peace Prize, we are talking about the culture of the world and what is the value of peace movement. But as mentioned, when he wrote his will in 1895, the Norwegian parliament was the only parliament that cannot had the capacity of wage war because it's an autonomous region till getting their independence in 1905. And as of today, when we remember the peace spirit of the 19th century, we should think of the Nobel Peace Prize in the spirit of the 19th century peace movement, then we come to a position of the neutrality position of the Norwegian parliament. Because the spirit of making peace is against the alliances. Alliances means politicization. And Norwegian parliament is no more neutral, as we can say, because they are subject to be ally of a military organization and subject to be a political organization. And when the organization members are chosen by Norwegian parliament, the obligation of being loyal to the foreign policy of the Norwegian parliament is much more important for the selected members of the committee, other than, how can I say, the spirit of the 19th century. I mean, when the spirit of 19th century, when it means that disarmament means also opposing to waging the war. But the problem of today's Nobel Peace Prize is, in fact, must be expressed by the theories of cultural hegemony. I mean, this is a dilemma. I mean, I would like to read for that. I mean, this is what is written on the official webpage of the United Nations. And it is written that during its 75 years existence, the United Nations specialized agencies, related agency funds, programs, and staff have won the Nobel Peace Prize 12 times. Among the agencies that had received the Nobel Peace Prize, the UN High Commissioner for received it 2 times. And the UN webpage, official UN webpage, describes the Nobel Peace Prize as prestige. Kofi Annan and Dag Hammarskjöld were also honored for their work by the Norwegian Nobel Committee, according to the official website of the United Nations. And here we can see something very interesting. When we say that, when the United Nations website said that, Secretary General of the UN and the UN staff were honored by the Norwegian Nobel Committee. Here we have got the cultural hegemony. What is the cultural hegemony? The UN webpage gives a political psychology to us that the Nobel Peace Prize is above the United Nations and the United Nations peacebuilding architecture, United Nations peacekeeping, and the concept of all human rights values. And when we see the cultural hegemony above the United Nations, can this be happen? I mean, can the United Nations website define to be honored by a committee chosen by a member of a parliament who has got the member of a military and political organization? Then when we come to the cultural hegemony, the cultural hegemony based on the psychology of the people and the political psychology of the people. I want to give the example of 1973 Nobel Peace Prize laureates Henry Kissinger and Leo Tolstoy. The Nobel Peace Prize for the 1973 Paris Agreement to intend to bring a ceasefire in Vietnam War and withdraw the American forces. But the important thing is that when you give the Peace Prize to the two representatives of the warring sides for making peace, I mean, also it gives in political psychology as a cultural hegemony in the minds that the two sides are equally responsible for the outbreak of the war. And you legitimize the actions of the United States of America in the Vietnam War. And you give the Nobel Peace Prize to the foreign minister of a country, invited country, which was in fact fighting in origin for the implementation of Article 73 of the UN Charter. And then we come to another position. I mean, the UN values and the choice of the Nobel Peace Prize Committee. And I would like to give the example of from Ethiopia, the person Abiy Ahmed Ali. He was accused of being laureated for the Nobel Peace Prize for the well-orchestrated campaign of ethnic cleansing against Somali Muslims in Ogaden in 2018, before he was laureated to the Nobel Peace Prize. So when we come to the position that the Nobel Peace Prize Committee did not effectively make the obligation of the due diligence, which is a principle of the UN. So we see that the obligations arising from the UN values and the political choice of the Nobel Peace Prize, they are different. Then we have to say one more thing. I think we should ask the United Nations officially as human rights defender to change the webpage and to change the wording of being honored of the UN by the Nobel Peace Prize. It is an obligation, I have to say, subject to Article 103 of the UN Charter. Because Article 1 of the UN Charter, it is written that in the event of a conflict between the obligations of the members of the United Nations under the present charter and their obligations under any other international agreement, their obligation under this present charter shall prevail. And we have to remember one thing. The UN bodies, when honored by the Nobel Peace Prize, they can be taken. The award is something very important. And Alfred Nobel's Peace Prize is a social culture. But we have to remember the responsibility of international civil servants. The UN Secretary General is an international civil servant. And UN bodies are working as an international civil servant. And the General Assembly Resolution 67/257 legalized the standard conduct in the international civil service of the UN and their obligations. And the first obligation of the UN's international civil servants and the UN bodies is the obligation of the impartiality of the international civil service is to be maintained. And can we say in that position that a Norwegian parliament, which is a political body, choose the members of a committee and this committee choose the person to be given a peace prize and this prize will honor the United Nations. No, This is against the standard conduct of the international civil servants, and this is against the UN General Assembly resolution 67/257. And we should ask the UN official webpage to be changed, because when there is a conflict, this conflict is the UN values must be higher. And we have to remember one thing. War is other means of politics. And when there is not an armed conflict or use of force, politics with cultural hegemony can well organize the future. With these values, I do believe that we have to ask the Norwegian Peace Committee, Norwegian Peace Prize Committee, to return back the values of the 19th century. I mean, as the example of NATO, I mean, they should reject as an obligation the nomination of NATO. It is accepted for 50 years that who are nominated, but as a value, as a preventive measure, they should make a press release that we cannot accept any political organization or military organization to be nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize, because it's against the will of Alfred Nobel. When we say that disarmament is written in his will, NATO and disarmament are conflict values. Mm-hmm. And a political organization, I think I'm coming to the end of my time, I will say that we have to protect the Nobel Peace Prize. Nobel Peace Prize is a cultural value for us and a pioneer of the 19th century values. And to return back to origin values of the Nobel Peace Prize, we have to re-ask them to give the priorities, and especially maybe we should ask the UN, their official webpage, to change the wording of being honored, because it is against the UN Charter. Thank you very much, dear President.
Thank you, Professor Güzel, for highlighting this development for us. Let me shortly repeat some of your key elements. You pointed out the discrepancy between the original goal of Alfred Nobel and the recent developments. And you were also mentioning, for example, the Nobel Peace Prize when it comes to Vietnam, Henry Kissinger and Le Duc Tho, and also when it comes to Ethiopia and the question, how can a military organization like NATO be a nominee? And one key terminus you mentioned was the concept of cultural hegemony. So the question is also a hierarchy of values. So is the Nobel Peace Prize in value higher than the goals and objectives of United Nations? No, it's not, but the recent development tends into this direction. And this is what we're talking about, then how to refresh the original goals and values. Okay, like that? Okay. Thank you very much for this start of our discussion. To continue on the topic of recent developments, I would like now to refer to our next panelist, Dr. Laszlo Flam, as I said before, distinguished scholar of Europa Haus Budapest. We were talking about, you have two statements, and please restrict yourself to the first one, the polarizing and the politicizing effect of the prize. So what are the controversies? And yeah, please take into account the time constraint, and please, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me? Is it okay?
Yes, perfect, yeah.
So I would like to say that this is very important to refer to the very authentic and relevant sources about this question. Professor Güzel already mentioned actually many times the official websites of the UN and other players in order to investigate this very delicate question about polarizing and politicizing effect of the Nobel Prize. I continue from this line. The Norwegian Nobel Committee and the Norwegian Nobel Institute together, they have their website, official website, and the Norwegian Nobel Committee used to express its opinions on political considerations that affect the nomination selection of the Nobel Prize laureates. However, one of the most relevant articles on the official website of the committee is dated back to year 2000, and no refreshment. So the article is run under the title Controversies and Criticisms. So controversies and critics. I think this is very relevant to this question what we talk about now. And I ask that what happened then in the next 20 years after publication of the article? So this original article on the official website of the committee didn't refer to the dynamics in the world politics that took place over the past 20 years and contributed to certain degree to this polarizing and politicizing effect of the Nobel Prize nomination. What are these dynamics which contributing to this? First, I would like to say, list up in a very positive sense after 2000, as the speakers before me already referred to the, for example, climate change. These are new domain, however, totally connected to the new domain of the concept of the peace in the 21st century. There are also some other positive trends without these negative tendencies, like the Nobel Prize laureates Kailash Satyarthi from India and Malala Yousafzai from Pakistan, and they won jointly the Nobel Prize among others because of the struggle for the right of children to education. So this is also one on another domains, which I think a very positive contribution for the future, in the future concept of how to judge, how to assess the different effect of the Nobel Prize. But now I came to my main point. There are controversial matters too, coming from these 20 years, which affect in a negative way the spirit of the Nobel Prize. What are these effects? I would like to refer to the European Union when it held Nobel Prize 2012, I remember. However, this Nobel Prize award went because of the promotion of peace, democracy in the European by the European Union. However, I must say that during that time, it was already a very bad tendency within the European Union in 2012. It means that there were a lot of civil society actors, organizations, church organizations, whose fundamental rights were totally violated by a government of a European Union member country that year. So for me, this act of having the Nobel Prize or awarding the Nobel Prize to the European Union didn't serve any grounds of celebration. And I have to say that the state of democracy and rule of law in the EU in the past 10 years after this nomination or award, even worsening. So even now there is no solution. In addition, there are more countries and regimes within the EU which follow this very, very bad tendency I talk about. Actually, you mentioned already the NATO. I don't want to go back to this issue. For me, this is also a very controversial matter, which can contribute to this polarizing effect of the Nobel Prize. I just would like to remember you that as the NATO concern in the 60s, last century, there was also NATO member states that used the napalm weapon to crush independent freedom movements in Africa. I don't want to say the name of the country. And just refer to the Afghanistan mission of NATO by the end of August this year. I don't need to make more details. What are the consequences of the NATO withdrawal from Afghanistan? If you just think of people who left there and they have a very bitter future if they have the choice to have any future there. Mm-hmm. So I would like to sum up that these controversial matters, if we see in the 21st century, if we look at the laureates of the Nobel Prize, these controversial matters will definitely contribute to these negative polarizing effects of the Nobel Prize. And one more, what can be the solution? I think the scholars of the Nobel of the Nobel Institute, Norwegian Nobel Institute, these scholars are in charge of explaining, judging the option of the nominates to the Norwegian Nobel Committee. So these scholars should work on a new value catalog, which could help to filter out this negative polarizing effect of the award of the Nobel Peace Prize. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Flam, for this valuable input and for pointing out more aspects of this controversy. You were mentioning those like a kind of article from the committee itself from the year 2000. It has not been refreshed so far, so it does not reflect the global dynamics of the past 20 years. And you were also addressing like some new aspects which gave a rather positive flair, like taking into account climate change or the right for children to education. But on the other side, we have those effects that give like a negative spirit to the original goal, where we have a European Union and some of the member states and NATO. So this is all these developments are the basis for today's polarizing effects. And we're going further into some details, and this will later then be our base for talking about how to refresh value and criteria. Thank you very much for that contribution. We now move on to our next panelist, Dr. Philip Agatonos. As I mentioned before, he's an Austrian diplomat and he's the former head of the Office of Science and Technology at the Austrian Embassy in Beijing. Are you with us, Dr. Agatonos?
I'm here.
Ah, yeah, I can see you, I can hear you, perfect. Would you please be so nice as to talk to us about the Nobel Peace Prize and its goal of fraternity between nations, standing armies, and the promotion of peace? The floor is yours. I can't hear you.
Thank you very much.
And,
especially for the invitation. I suppose that my current function is more relevant than my previous one.
Okay.
I'm responsible for peace building mm-hmm. and civilian crisis management at the Security Policy Directorate at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Actually, I came back to this job after spending 4 years in China doing technology, which was like a bracket in my career. And before that, I had the pleasure to be the founder of the Austrian Peace Building Platform. And actually, the criticism surrounding the nomination of the European Union has surprised me a lot. Because if there is a successful peace project globally, it is the European Union itself. Of course, there are member states that do this or that. I mean, Hungary is one of them. Poland is another one. I'm sure that our own member states are also not without faults, but it's not the Union's fault. It's that the Union does as much as the member states allow it to. And the fact that until now, it took us 10 years to be able to at least have some financial sanctioning possibilities against severe breaches of basic human rights, it says a lot. So it's a work in progress, but the foundation itself and the operation of the European Union is a peace project itself, as it is action. It's the biggest development or a donor in the world. It is the majority, two-thirds of its international crisis management is with civilian needs, and even the military ones are non-combat. So actually, the European Union is contributing a lot to both crisis management and peace building globally in the world. So that was surprised me a lot. Now, the politicization and the original goals. What would have Nobel done now? I assume that he was, especially through his friendship with Bernhard von Suttner, Nobel would have be in the avant-garde of the peace activism. And since I happen to have worked with those guys a lot, I know them both, the Austrian ones, the few ones. We are not on the strong side. There are other countries which are more people working on peace building than what we have at home, but also abroad. I have to say that the peace building is the most political issue that you can imagine. It does not go without controversy. There is no peace without conflict. It's not about not having conflict. It's about not having violent conflict. Conflict is the essence of any social development. You cannot develop a society where everything is still and stable. You can't have it. Harmony and peace does not develop societies. You need conflict, but you need to make sure that the conflict has non-violent mechanisms to evolve, to move society forward, to trigger innovation, to trigger social development, to trigger economic developments and development of democracy. So yes, it is a political process. And yes, I agree, some of the nominations went completely wrong. Yeah, and you cited a few, like the Ethiopian one. Some of the nominations, they were pairs. These were, I think, and I believe, concrete choices. What do you do in a very big conflict that occupies you at the time, like the Israeli-Palestinian conflict? They got it two times. It was not only Yasser Arafat. Yasser Arafat got it. Peres got it. I think Sadat got it. So, a lot of people around that, in the broader Palestinian Arab-Israeli conflict got the Nobel Peace Prize. And the problem is still there. We have not arrived at a solution yet. We are far from that. And the recent recent incidents, including some flags flying around, prove that. Yeah, that it is still a very hot issue and there's still a lot of work. So what do you do? We don't give the prize? I'm not sure if that would have been a better message. The same goes for other big conflicts. You mentioned the Vietnam War, or maybe after the war would have been better than during the war. Yeah, so big question marks, and I read the stories. But again, I'm not sure how uncontroversial was giving the peace prize to Bertha von Suttner at the time. Not in the sense that he wasn't fully within the scope of what Nobel wanted, but was it really at that time, how non-controversial it was? I believe it was very controversial, and this triggered a lot of discussions. And I think this is also the reason of the prize, to trigger discussions. Yeah? And you have human rights, you mentioned climate. I fully share on that, on this enlargement, because peace building without tackling issues like climate change. Look, for example, at the how in the Sahel, but not only in the Sahel, climate is triggering migration movement, it's triggering fight over resources, farmers versus herd keepers. And this is the biggest conflict in the Sahel, but not only, also in other parts of the world. The conflict about water resources. I mean, think about the five big rivers out of the Himalaya and how potential conflict is there. Or go to the situation in Siberia with the climate change and the carbon dioxide, the methane that goes into the atmosphere. So there are a lot of issues there. Education, you mentioned rightly, because without education, there can't be any peace. And of course, human rights. And I think that the Nobel Peace Committee are taking high political cost. I remember they were banned by the Chinese government for several decades because two times they made decisions that were not liked by China, two times. And I remember then how suddenly after then you get a period when you do bad things, you have a period of disgrace, and then you have again, you are again on the good side that your ambassador is received. But they didn't care about the political. So actually they take consequential political decisions, controversial decisions, and they are ready to meet the consequence. And I think, for that, it is welcomed. The UN, would they be able to do it better? No, they would not. Because the UN, with the five veto powers in the Security Council, which cannot even agree on Syria, cannot even agree on Israel-Palestine, cannot agree on the major conflicts, cannot agree on the South China Sea, they cannot agree because it is not a democratic organization, unfortunately, which can take the controversial stand for peace. They cannot. They do it only when it's minor conflicts. There they can agree. But on the big conflicts, they cannot, unfortunately. Yeah? And that's something that we all peace-loving have to work for. So it's actually excellent to have somebody else. And then when you don't like the decision, you can criticize. And the fact that it has been criticized by so different people on different instances, it means they couldn't be so wrong in total. Now NATO. Now, first of all, nominations are nominations. It's not awards. Personally, I would very much doubt if NATO got the Peace Prize. That's my personal opinion. I would extremely doubt if that has any justification. But don't forget, last year, Donald Trump was also nominated. So that's not a criterion who is nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. And the fact that Mahatma Gandhi didn't get it doesn't mean that there's no comparison of that. He unfortunately was killed too much ahead of his time. So, and I think he would have gotten it at some point. Mandela got it. But the prize for Mandela getting the prize was that de Klerk also got it. Yeah? So de Klerk was not one of the good guys initially. So I think we should not dwell too much. I mean, it should be clear that the military organization has nothing to do, in a peace prize. Of course, they have some aspects, crisis management, securing certain situations are important. I will not neglect that. There is a role, but I wouldn't go as far as saying that the military organization should be awarded the Peace Prize. I think there are a lot of people and organizations that would go before that. Final words now. Yeah, I mean, I think the Peace Prize, and that's how I see it, is both a recognition of past and an encouragement for future. For example, President Ahtisaari of Finland that got the prize for his role, I think for the Kosovo, I'm not sure, but he was also a peace broker in Aceh in Indonesia. He managed to solve a 30-year-old conflict between Indonesia and a potentially breakaway province. And he has, through his personal contributions, is one of the leading actors still in a very high age in peace building. So there it worked. Whether with an acting US president, whether this is wise, I'm not sure. Gorbachev also got the prize, but he got it more or less that because he managed to oversee a very civilized a breakup of the Soviet Union with not too much bloodshed, which I per se was, it could have gone differently if you look at other scenarios. But acting presidents, I think they wouldn't do it again. I mean, that is maybe, maybe one should wait a bit after the tenure and look back when they've done something. But as I said, I think it's a learning by doing every time. There are different, correlations coming on. So having triggered this discussion and many more discussions already justifies the Peace Prize, because there is discussions on peace and peace building around the world. And along this is a justification for the prize, and I wish it a long life. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Agathanos. This was a very valuable contribution because it broadens the perspective we have been talking about so far. You like relativated the crisis or like valuing the controversy when saying there is no development without controversy. So this is what was like an important point. And you say peace building does not go without any conflict. So conflict and controversy also about the Nobel Peace Prize is an important point of the process. And you also mentioned, in contrary to what have been mentioned before, that you say European Union, not the member states, but European Union as a whole is one of the most successful peace projects. And another point, maybe we can refer to that at the end of the forum, is that you make, that you remind us to distinguish between nomination and who gets the award. Because nominated can be a lot of people and organizations, but who is getting the award afterwards? So these are some of your key points, if I understood it correctly. Okay, thank you very much for this broadening perspective. I would like now to move on to the next panelist, Dr. Georg Zanger, Austrian lawyer and president of the Austrian Chinese Business Association. I would like to invite you. I think you are with us somewhere, somehow. Yeah, I cannot see you, but I'm pretty sure you are there.
I'm here, okay.
Okay, hi, here you are. I would like to invite you to give us some insight into the 2021 nominees for the Nobel Peace Prize. There are also some controversies, and maybe you have like, I don't know, one or two examples to talk about. Please, the floor is yours.
Thank you so much, Professor Agathanos. I have something what I get from your speech, so maybe it's give prize to people who make conflict, because they are the basis of peace process. So that's something, but let me talk. The awarding of the Nobel Prize has become increasingly politically influenced in recent years. Ideology, social system, power, justice characterize the development. Although the Nobel Prize should in itself be political neutral. So I'm not really agree with Agathanos. The selection of the laureates repeatedly leads to controversy. It is often awarded at a relatively short distance from the relevant event, so that historical consideration and the inclusion of long-term consequences are not possible. This year, the people and groups nominated, you talked already about, for the Peace Prize could not be more controversial. NATO, Alexei Navalny, Martin Lee, Svetlana Tikhanovskaya, and Donald Trump on the one hand, and Black Lives Matter, and Swedish environment activist Greta Thunberg on the other. In the following, I will limit myself to individual nominees, NATO, Martin Lee, Black Lives Matter, and Greta. As you thought already, that NATO and President Biden have blamed the local Afghan government for failing to stand against the Islamic militant group does not mitigate its own senseless bombing without a humanitarian objective. He has concealed the fact that 20 years of war, over 100,000 civilian casualties have not brought peace, that neither infrastructure, nor education, and poverty reduction have been achieved. What has remained, Scholtenberg said, members of the NATO are concerned about getting their staff and other personnel out of Afghanistan. Martin Lee, he was part of agents of Western anti-China forces in Hong Kong. Long before he returned to Hong Kong to China, of Hong Kong to China, Martin Lee actively cooperated with the policy deployment of British Hong Kong authorities while trying to internationalize the Hong Kong issue and begging for intervention of foreign powers. After the return of Hong Kong to the motherland, Martin Lee was a member of the Legislative Council of the SAR, but in his actual words and deeds, he repeatedly challenged the bottom line of the principle of one country, two systems, condoned Hong Kong intervention, spared no effort to attack the Chinese government, and deliberately discredited China. Lee stopped his public activism as a result of the Hong Kong National Security Law, which went into effect on 1st of July, 2020. What was his contribution to the fraternization of people? What was his contribution to peace? Black Lives Matters is a transnational movement that originated in the United States and opposes violence against Black people or people of color. Black Lives Matter regularly organized protests against the killing of Black people by police officers and more generally against racial profiling, police violence, and racism. It now stands worldwide against racism of any kind of strives for peaceful, non-violent coexistence without distinction of origin, social status, and race. Greta Thunberg fights for the preservation of the environment, for the reduction of CO2, and thus for the chance to prevent further environmental catastrophes. She makes an important contribution to humanity and its peaceful coexistence. Let me conclude with some doubts on poverty reduction in China. Robert Fitzdom writes in his book, Successful China, bringing economic development to poor areas is the key to sustainable liberation from poverty. This includes structural land reforms, heavy investment in infrastructure and education, know-how and financial resources. Under these criteria, the award of the Alfred Nobel Memorial Prize in Economic Science in November 2019 to the scientists Esther Duflo, Abhijit Banerjee, and Michael Kramer, who work on poverty research, should be considered in the context of their child development program. They concede in the interview, "We will never understand poverty. But if someone does not understand the cause of poverty, how can they fight poverty?" Instead of awarding the Nobel Peace Prize for political reasons to countries that wage wars, consideration should be given to those who behave peacefully and ensure that all people in this world are free from poverty. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Zanger, for sharing your considerations with us. You were pointing out that the Nobel Peace Prize should be neutral, and that means, to your viewpoint, that also the nominees should be neutral. And you were talking about NATO and Martin Lee on one side, and Black Lives Matter and Greta Thunberg on the other side. And you were mentioning the importance of poverty fighting as another category for Nobel Peace Prize. You had a rather different viewpoint than the speaker before. This is perfect for us because different viewpoints, they build the fruitful basis for exchange and discussion. So thank you very much for the contribution. I would like now to come back to Professor Güzel. We are now going to hear a very specific story you are definitely not going to hear every day. As I mentioned in the introduction, Professor Güzel is himself a three-time nominee for the Nobel Peace Prize. And Professor Güzel, you are willing to share your personal story in connection with the Peace Prize with us. Please let us hear your story. Thank you.
Many thanks. Well, I would like to say that when I was nominated for the first time, it was a big surprise for me. I was nominated with a friend of mine. He is a rector of a university in Azerbaijan. I had written a petition to the UN Human Rights Council for the root causes or to prevent a new legitimized new civil war in Iraq, which is legalized by the reports of the Secretary General. And the UN Security Council, which was originated from Article 140 of the UN for the new constitution of Iraq after the invasion of Iraq. I work on the root cause of the problems, and it happens sometimes without knowing. We have to say that the new future civil war legalized by the UN Security Council reports and the reports of the Secretary General is originated from Article 140 of the Constitution of Iraq. And in the Constitution of 140, it is written that there is an internal dispute to territories and the future of this will be decided with a referendum in Kirkuk. This seems logical. Because after that, with the new constitution of 2005, a regional government was established, and the internal disputed territory is between the central government and the regional government. And till the 2005 constitution, the valid constitution of Iraq was 1925. And we have to remember my three nominations based on, in fact, on decolonization. And here, the mistake. I proved the nullity of the Article 140 of the Constitution of Iraq, and I proved that the legality given by the UN Security Council reports and Secretary General reports subject to the definition of internal disputed territories for the legitimization of the new civil war. I would like to say Iraq was a mandated territory, and it was subject to Article 22 of the mandate of the League of the Nations. And Iraq was the first country, in fact, in today's sense, decolonized from a foreign country. Iraq was became a kingdom after the First World War taking place and given a mandate position by the United Kingdom. And in 1932, Iraq got its declaration. Iraq got its declaration with a, Iraq got its independence with a constitutional declaration of independence, which was prepared by the League of Nations Permanent Mandate Commission. And at that time, we should remember that the League of Nations created a minority protection regime in the newly independent states or the states that gained territory like Greece. And it's a self-contained regime. And after the dissolution of the League of the Nations, the UN was created subject to the individual values, not collective rights. And they said that the minority protection regime of the League of Nations ceased to exist. This is the reason why they say that Article 140 is legal. I would like to return back to Article 32 Declaration of Independence of Iraq, which was created, which was written by the Permanent Mandate Commission. And we have to also mention that there were not only one minority in Iraq. There are different minorities like Turkomans, Assyrians, Chaldeans, Nasturis. And in the Constitutional Declaration of Independence of 32, the minority protection regime of was established, and political equality of the equalities were guaranteed. And it is written that in the future, no laws can change this equality of the minorities. But Article 140 of the new constitution is against the equality of the minorities. And they said that minority protection regime of the League of Nations is dissolved and the declaration, constitutional declaration of independence is not valid. And this is the breaking point. because the only thing that the United Nations did not take from the League of Nations is the minority protection regime. But when we think of the Iraqi kingdom got its independence, this is equivalent to the UN chapter 12 and 13, and that is a trusteeship system. That is the same as the colonization of the sea mandate states on Africa. And when the values are gained by the colonization, it's an international treaty. And in the international treaty, when it is a concept of decolonization, there is the Jukkogian values of the people and gives Erdogan's responsibility. And for the Vienna Convention of Law of Treaties, when there is a Jukkogian norm, the entry force of the Vienna Law of Convention of Law of Treaties goes back to the past, not being into the force. And this how creates the nullification of Article 140 of the Constitution of Iraq. And we should also remember that the declaration of constitutional declaration of independence of Iraq is an international treaty, and it is changed.
Hallo, lieber Richard.
Hallo.
Ja, aber bis später.
Wir haben da jetzt eine kleine Störung.
Ja, sorry.
Okay. It is changed by a regime changement of the invasion occupation forces. And this is as well against the Geneva Conventions with the limits of the power of the occupying power. And I know that my time is limited. So by proving the nullity of the Article 140, I mean, I try to prevent any future legalized civil war. And if the UN Security Council is to change just one wording, internal disputed territories, there will not be any civil war in Iraq. And my self-contamination is for West Papua by my dear long life friend from Hawaii. Also, I should mention that with Leon Kailo SU, and we are nominated from Hawaii University. He is the foreign minister of the re-established of the Kingdom of Hawaii. Let me mention a little thing. It's an international wrongful act of the United Nations by putting the Hawaii as a, in the decolonization system. Because the colonization system is based on discovery law, and the colonization system put the places conquered by subject to be not member of international community of the Western powers, but Hawaii Kingdom was a member of international postal union, and it was a member of the international community, but with a coup d'etat, with the support of American Navy, American Marines, they make a coup d'etat and they joined the United States, and they made a false self-determination referendum, which is null and void, subject to the decisions of International Court of Justice. In fact, also some people from Alaska is searching for it. What we did with West Papua is based on the colonization process of it. But sometimes when you try to go to the root causes and try to be objective, even it is not written in our petition and book on the modus vivendi situation of West Papua, we also, without mentioning, put another value. There is a problem, Mr. Dear Agotsonos knows much better than me, the problem of self-defined or self-identified so-called national liberation movements. And so many people died between the stage of the decolonization process of West Papua, when the Indonesia claimed of the legality of taking West Papua subject to the principle, not legal objection, but subject to the principle of utopian status, which is a conflict prevention mechanism at that period, and they made it.
Professor Gitzel, you have 4 more minutes to go.
Okay, so with Mr. Leon Kailo is here. We said that the legal status of West Papua depends on the last resolution of General Assembly, and the resolution is used by the wording of taking note. It means that the legal status of West Papua is not identified. But the important point, without mentioning, some people accused us from West Papua and liberation movements because we do not define the so-called national liberation movement during the period. and this is an important point. But the last nomination is, in fact, I solved the citizen problem of the all minorities in Myanmar, and with the obligation arising from an international treaty, that is the new ETLE agreement, which was made by the at that time MUMA and the United Kingdom, and with the Permanent Court of Arbitration decision on Lancaster House undertakings, when a treaty is made on decolonization, it was an internal matter of the colonial power and to be colonized. But when the state gets independence, it gives the becomes an international treaty. When it's an international treaty, they cannot put out the citizens of the people they accept in the future. It gives an international responsibility, it's not an internal position. And I also want the Myanmar government, because they use the clean slate doctrine, and they say that the doctrine of state continuity, but they made a mistake, because they took these lands before the United Kingdom conquered from the Arakan Kingdom. If they use the clean slate doctrine and the doctrine of state continuity, the Arakan Rohingyas can use the same theory and ask for independence. Even I don't want to give mention the name of the country, my theories are used with a other country. But I would like to say that the important part of my work for Myanmar is that this concept is valid for the all statelessness position of the all decolonized states, and it brings a new perspective. And if I've got 1 minute, I would like to say something about when we are talking about peace movements, and we have got the peace police. Because before my work, many Rohingya activists, especially in Europe, asked for their citizenship. They said that this is a position that can never be so. After my solution, they stopped asking their right for citizenship, because they are much more peace spoilers. And there is a danger, I would like to say. The case in the International Court of Justice opened by Gambia to Myanmar government is totally wrong. And it gives false hope to the people. Sometimes when we are peace activists, we can come to the position of political psychology of the people. Now they are giving false hopes for more than 1 million people in the camps that everything will be solved by the decision of International Court of Justice. It's just for the criminalization of the people. But a new game is being played. And with the, after the decision of the International Court of Justice, the so-called representatives in Europe will say that we are now a national liberation movement. With the decision of International Court of Justice, it will criminalize something, and we will have another dirty game in Myanmar, unfortunately, for a related Al-Qaeda, Arakan Rohingya Salvation Army, to be claimed to be legalized with the decision of International Court of Justice. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Let me shortly repeat. Your first nomination was in 2013 for your efforts in preventing a new future potential civil war in Iraq. It was the question whether the minority protection regime is still in force. The second nomination concerned West Papua, which is still a trust territory under the administration of Indonesia. And the third one happened in the context of your efforts for solving the issue of like a statelessness of the minorities in Myanmar. And as we could see from your accounts, it shows how complex and multifaceted the process of peacemaking really is, and how much long and how much effort it takes to come to one, two or three steps further. Thank you very much for sharing your personal story with us. Yeah, last not least, after having learned about the Nobel Peace Prize today, we talked about its original goals, and we heard a lot about several discussion points about nominees, about people and organizations who have been awarded the prize. So the goal of this forum is also to move one step further. That means after talking about the status quo and after discussing about the critical points, it would be very fruitful to now look let's say some steps ahead, what could be done about this development? Are there any ideas how to refresh the goal or how to realign the Nobel Peace Prize with its original goals? And in this context, I would like to invite Dr. Laszlo Flam as our last speaker for today. I mentioned before that you had some considerations on how to return to the original goal. Would you please share your ideas and considerations with us? The floor is yours.
Yeah. Thank you very much. This is a very complex question, so I cannot give you in some minutes the ultimate full solution answers. This is not my post either. And so I just would like to make some points which could help us further, as you said, to make thoughts on this also very important issue. So I would like to raise 3 points. The first one is that we should look at the key fields where Nobel Prize laureates carry out their activities in the first half of the 20th century. So at the beginning, we should look at further what was the original aim, original activities, domains of peacemaking, peace activism, where they were awarded to the Nobel Prize. And if you look at these fields, I should say these fields have lots of relevance to nowadays. So if you look at, for example, the humanitarian and refugee aid or solving of military and civil conflicts, health crisis, or combating poverty and non-discrimination, or promotion of democracy, human rights, civil liberties, or the new value catalog of the UN rights from last century, the promotion of economic and social rights and equalities. So I think this could be a very good starting point just to look at the, as also Mr. Professor Gazel referred to it, to look at the original spirit of the Nobel Prize. And secondly, of course, that we should take into account today, current, complex and global challenges. As we also mentioned, climate change, but also, for example, food security. And Mr. Agathonos also mentioned already these very non-problems challenges like access to water resources. So I think this is also part of these new challenges which show the new domain of peace-related activities, efforts, how to manage, how to tackle these challenges. And I also refer back to Mr. Agathonos that the award of Nobel Prize should be a guide for the future. Therefore, we should strive to unite this original spirit of Nobel Prize, its original value system, combine it with today's global complex challenges, and after this, to show, to provide a guide for the future, future generations of decision makers and other important players, stakeholders. And the third point is then how? Which way? I have an idea for this. I already mentioned the Norwegian Nobel Institute and the scholars of the Institute, they assist to the Nobel Committee in selecting the nominees of the Nobel Peace Prize. These scholars should apply new values categories which would help to choose, to select those laureates who do not divide people or nations or the international community, but they promote the international understanding and cooperation in the new fields, complex fields of peace-related issues. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Zanger also selected some of the nominees of the Nobel Prize this year, and we can see the controversies among the nominees, and we can also see the hope to find those individuals or organization who can already show this features I talk about. Mm-hmm. And the Norwegian Nobel Institute scholars will have actually the key roles, and they are competent in this field, how to select in the future the nominees, and on which way, upon which value system categories they will continue their work. So they should have a kind of input from the international community, researchers, professors, and so on, to see these trends and provide new articles, which is really time, for on the official website of the Nobel Committee too. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for outlining the challenges ahead. You were mentioning what this is about. It's about refreshing the values, looking at the original topics, and also looking at the new topics, global challenges. And you were also just tackling the question of how. And you said that the scholars of the Norwegian Institute, they play some key role in applying a new set of categories. As we have some minutes left, and you were addressing, amongst other, Dr. Agathonos, who had so far only once the opportunity to give a talk, I would like to ask Mr. Agathonos if he wants to just address some of the topics mentioned now at the end of the forum on looking the road that is ahead of us in realigning the Nobel Peace Prize. Please, if you would spare some thoughts with us before we conclude the forum. Thank you very much. I don't hear you.
So?
Yeah, perfect.
No.
Yeah, I can hear you.
So I think the first issue, and I agree that the key is the scientific advice that flows ahead. So the screening needs to get better. But we also have the nomination rule. Any government can nominate, and of course that's of course bound to have nominations that are, let's say, questionable. Even North Korea could nominate. For example, its great leader. So it is per definition, we have these things there. So it is, of course, and then the scientific advice is good. Yeah? So of course, I would assume that looking at Heidelberg in the index of conflict, or whatever in the Stockholm is done on the CIPRI, or what the institute calls, these things are good to have a look. In the end of the day, there should also be, let's say, a bit of self-restraint, and I agree with the one on giving, awarding the prize in ongoing situations. Mm-hmm. Because if they're really ongoing, it is you shouldn't wait a bit to play out. I mean, the exceptions of the very big conflicts, of course, these were some kind of hope that there is a big breakthrough. And especially when it comes to the Middle East, because that these are the conflict that goes to 48 or actually to the 20s. Mm-hmm. So it's a 100-year conflict. So, you know, from time to time, a peace prize may be the right tool to keep people reflecting. It's like a bit of a carrot so that you don't give up completely. But actually, in ongoing conflicts, it's not really very, very wise. There's a second prize that can be awarded for the ongoing ones. It's the Sakharov Prize. The European Union is awarding the Sakharov Prize. They can award this to Mrs. Tikhanovskaya with a lot of right. Huh? I mean, or to the Chinese activists, which I don't share the analysis of Mr. Tsang. But that should not be the Nobel. You know, the European Union can, and the European Parliament, it's a parliament that takes a political, gives a political message, and they should do that. Especially when you get the burden away of your shoulders and you're already on a blacklist, well, you can award what you like because you're already blacklisted. Nothing more can happen to you. But back to the Nobel Prize, I think you know what would benefit us if you know at some point somebody like you, Sir, and who has really worked with conflict gets it as a symbol, because you also need to let's say it's to address the hundreds or thousands of real peace brokers who are analyzing the conflict. I learned a lot about the Hawaii thing. I've read about Hawaii, but I was not aware of these details. I've dealt a lot with Myanmar, so I'm very aware of yours. Actually, I also teach strategic planning, and one of the my scenario is very much built on Myanmar because it has a very complex situation. So if you want to address the justice system, the civil administration system, the different federal levels of government, so it's a very, 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 very complex situation. So I was very enlightened about what you said. But actually what I'm missing is somebody like you. Like, you know, I'm not saying you as a person, of course, I would be happy, but somebody that is dealing, you know, a lot and goes deep. Because that's what we're lacking, and that's my final statement, in the peace building process, we are lacking this deep analysis. We are too much living on the CNN effect of where is the spotlight. We all look at this conflict and everything else is forgotten. Mm-hmm. And I this is really not good. And I have to tell you, you know, I see daily the discussions that ministers are having, and they are all driven by this. So from time to time, if a scholar that really, you know, forgets about what is now on the headlines and looks back and looks deep, I think that would be a very good encouragement but whether the Nobel Prize Committee will do that, I'm not sure. Because what will be the effect on the committee if they award it? So, this guy got it, and then they will go to the next agenda. But if they award it to a popular figure, controversial figure, they all or themselves get the publicity. So we are living in, unfortunately, this media very quick time. So that's not always very good for peace building. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Agatanov.
Let me say some words.
Yes, of course.
I believe. The most important thing is to disclose the awarding from politicians or governments to experts. Not only the decision must be by expert, but also the nominees, the awarding, because mm-hmm. If politics has the possibility to make politicians, but politics with awarding, then they will do that. It's clear. Mm-hmm. So I think that is one of the most important thing, this disclosure, and then it could be come back to the
original.
This what Nobel thought when he said that to give this prize, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So thank you very much for this concluding thoughts, because it gave a bit of new input. The one thing is the consideration to give the nominee or the process of the nomination in the hand of experts, and another input that we haven't tackled so far, but is like directing into the future, is that it needs people with deep analysis and not only looking at the hotspot. So I think these inputs at the end, they show us how complex is the road ahead of us. Of course, we are not going to solve it, but we have now today discussed, I think, the original intention, the controversies, and we have also, what is very important, addressed questions ahead of us, which are necessary to discuss to move one step further. So I really thank all the distinguished panelists that you have taken time to prepare on the topic, that you have spared your time with us today to have this fruitful exchange on the topic of the Nobel Peace Prize and peacemaking. I say auf Wiedersehen, but before we all say auf Wiedersehen, I will, in a final step, I would like to give the floor to Bernhard Müller, representative of Urban Forum, one of the organizers, and he will officially close our meeting.
Thank you very much, Alice. Many thanks for the competent moderation. Dear distinguished panelists, maybe you can see in an overview my notes. And I would like to give you a really short summary. I think a debate needs contradiction, and we lived this today. At the beginning, I would like to say it was forum number 4, a cooperation of Sinopress and Urban Forum. We had high-ranked participants, and they were leaders of NGOs, scientists, and diplomats. So, thank you very much for this interesting discussion. We asked some initial questions for today's online forum. One important question was, what assumptions will the Nobel Peace Prize still be based on in 2021? For more than 100 years, the prize has been awarded annually, with some exceptions, and hence been awarded to those who have done the most or the best work for fraternity between nations, for the abolition or reduction of standing armies, and for the holding and promotion of peace congresses, as they stated in Nobel's will. Therefore, the starting point of the agenda was whether Alfred Nobel's will is still being implemented at all. Beyond the topic of the Nobel Prize, however, we also ask broader questions. To what extent is the Nobel Peace Prize linked to peacemaking? To what extent, in recent years, numerous nominations have caused a sensation and also in part astonishment. In particular, we discussed the nomination of NATO as a laureate should be mentioned here. We talked about polarizing effects. And we heard that nominations are only nominations. Mm-hmm. Whoever is nominated has not yet won. We mentioned controversies versus neutrality. And we tried to give a view to the past, to the status quo, and to the future. And we also learned today that the Nobel Peace Prize can be and make head scratchers. One important question was, are the objectives of the Nobel Peace Prize based on the goals of the United Nations? It was discussed enormously today. And it was mentioned the important role of the European Union for peace building. And finally, I would like to say peace building and peacemaking is a major challenge, but we will not be able to live happily without serious efforts in this area. And I think you were very precise, and we are in time, and I would like to thank you all. And of course, also this forum will be transcribed and it will give a paper, and we will all find it on our website, Sinopress and Urban Forum. This brochure will be our next project. Thank you so much. Thank you, Helena, for your wonderful support and the enormous cooperation. Thank you, Alice. Have a nice day. I think it was very interesting. I'm sure that it was fruitful. I hope you have the same opinion And we will welcome you to further forums in the near future. Have a nice Friday. Goodbye and all the best wishes and stay healthy. Bye-bye.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.